Hello, my name is Jim Williams with the personal injury law firm of Burnett Williams. You're about to watch an episode in our series From Injury to Justice. If you like what you hear, please click below to subscribe. Hello, my name is Jim Williams with the law firm of Burnett Williams, and this is part of our series From Injury to Justice. Our special guest today is Kimberly Robb. I'd like to talk a little bit about yourself, Kimberly. I think you and I have kind of similar backgrounds as far as being attorneys go.
We do. So I was originally a New York attorney, and I came down to Virginia in 2008 and waived in 2009. And I always did defense litigation and then transferred over to plaintiff's litigation, did that for about 10 or so years. I'd done about 5.5 in New York, went back to defense for a little while and challenged, you and I had a bunch of cases against each
That's right.
And then Jim was looking for somebody. And so
here we are.
And now I've been here, 18 months?
That's right.
18 months.
What better job interview than having a case against the firm you're
going? That is true. And it was a very nice interview and went and met the firm. And I'm in the Midlothian office.
Right. Your background, you talked about being a defense attorney. Was it a difficult transition to make from being a defense attorney reporting to insurance adjusters and becoming a plaintiff's lawyer, or did you find it was easy?
I felt that it took the business out of it and I could practice law, because as a defense attorney, your life is 0.6 minute increments. And now I could actually read Lawyers Weekly or read a case, and I'm not under the gun of, I have to have all my time submitted to an insurance adjuster. And I also don't have as much client contact on the defense side. As you know, your clients are, you have clients, but you're also answering to an insurance company.
That's right.
So the one thing I do love is people. And you're going to get a lot of people on the plaintiff side with different stories, different backgrounds, which I love. And they're coming to us at such a vulnerable time in their lives, and they don't know who to turn to. And we get to be attorney and counselor at law. There's where the counselor comes in. And so I do like that part, because that's the best part, is to learn all the stories of everybody that we're representing.
Get to know your client.
Yes.
In the defense world, it doesn't really matter. You get to know the adjuster more than anyone else.
That is correct. You do. You knew them very intimately.
Let's talk a little bit about ADR, Alternative Dispute Resolution. Can you perhaps explain that to us and tell us what you favor in your practice?
I love alternative dispute resolution. And so as you know, I don't like to fly, right? And one of the reasons I don't like to fly is because I have no control. And one thing about a trial is when you give the case to the jury, you suddenly have no control. And it is the scariest time in a lawyer's life, is waiting for that jury light to come on and know that there's a verdict coming. With alternative dispute resolution, it takes a lot of that uncertainty away. One thing I say to clients all the time, and they say, we could just pick a jury. We'll just get this person and this person and this person. Then I ask them where they shop. Where do you go to the supermarket? And they say Publix. I said, okay, walk into Publix, take the first 7 people that walk through the door. And that's your jury. And that is who's going to decide a case that you've been living for years. And they might only be deciding it in a day, maybe 2 days if you're lucky. And they don't get to really hear much of your story, maybe 10 to 15 minutes. And half the time you're being cross-examined by the other side. So with alternative dispute resolution, is you have an objective, usually retired judge or lawyer, who has no, they don't have the rules of evidence. They don't have to rule on objections. They just can hear and listen to the story. And I think one thing we always say to clients is you're not going to do backflips usually out of the office. Somebody always has to give something up. But the issue is, how can we make it everybody get satisfied? Where's their line in the sand? Where's our line in the sand? Can we cross it? I think it's a wonderful, wonderful tool. And sometimes some courts, some jurisdictions require it, the judicial settlement conferences, but retired judges get to tell clients sometimes, well, it's also backing us up, that what we told you is right, but can bring to them the experiences of what they've seen juries do, or where they see a nuance in the case where a jury is going to grab on that and take hold of that, and it could potentially go in a completely different direction. The uncertainty is gone. The anxiety is gone. You certainly save a ton of money.
That was going to be my next question. What are the other advantages besides the client being in control of the situation?
Well, how do you prove your case? You're going to need experts. You know, we can all look and say, well, yes, I had a headache. I broke my leg. I suffered a concussion. We need your doctors to go up there and testify to that. And they don't work for free.
No, they don't.
at all. And so if they're shutting their practice down for an entire day of seeing patients, that's the charge. Or in the alternative, your doctor is being deposed on camera. And so the jury, now you're playing the game of when do I show a video? You're certainly not going to show it after lunch because the jury is going to be like, oh, I'm full from lunch. Doctor's going to talk for an hour and a half. And yeah, having a doctor live is obviously better, but sometimes money and financial comes into it and comes into play. It's a cost of your case. With mediation, you don't have that cost. You don't have to worry about blowing up demonstrative evidence. The other good thing about alternative dispute resolution is if you don't settle it that day, as you know, we might settle it a week later or a month later. Everybody goes back. They start kicking around, you know, some theory, stuff that was brought up that we're so focused doing plaintiff. We don't know what really the defense, we know sort of what they're thinking, but to get a strategy and say, oh, you know, I didn't look at it from that angle. And I find that more often than not, we're probably getting the result that the client probably wanted more than leaving it in the hands of seven people. I'm sure you know you've gone into a trial where maybe the advice, we always tell our clients they drive the bus, but our advice might be, it's a pretty decent settlement offer. And then the jury doesn't come back with anywhere near the settlement offer. And that's a rough thing.
What kind of things do you consider when selecting a potential mediator for a client?
I think venue is a big thing in Virginia. We focus so much on, because every county is really different. Virginia is such a, you've got Northern Virginia or Richmond, where your city, then you have some of the surrounding suburb areas. Then you have a lot of rural areas in Virginia. And I think what's very helpful is to try to pick a retired judge that had worked in some of those same courthouses where your case is. They know the jury pool. They've been seeing it for 30 years. They know if someone's coming in and say, this is ultra conservative or a little more liberal here, a little bit more, they're going to favor more on a plaintiff in this case. Oh, this might not work out for you so well. And also the thing with a mediator, you can really pick someone who you think might gel with your client.
Right.
Like we've had clients where I'm like, I need a female to deal with a female client because they're moms or they want to bring things up that are in their medical records that they might not feel comfortable in front of a jury or a man saying. So I think that helps. Or you might have someone who's a little more sensitive to someone who is a little more anxious. So I think all those factors come into play.
I wanted to talk about, you mentioned the expense involved in trying a case with getting the client's doctors to testify and having to take a day off. But let's talk about some of the indignities of the whole trial process and talk about DMEs, defense medical examinations.
Yes.
I call them the company doctor.
Right.
Can you explain that for us?
Oh, it's horrible. So what, again, when they're coming to us and they're in one of the most horrific times of their life, I don't even like going to the doctor to get a physical, right? But we have to do it. Now they've been in, seen multiple doctors for multiple different injuries, but the doctors know them. And now all of a sudden we call them, we say, hey, pursuant to the rules of the Supreme Court here and in Virginia, you have to submit yourself to an examination by a doctor that's been picked by the defense. And we're not coming with you.
Because we can't.
And, you know, and we have guidelines. You know, you can't answer this question. You can't fill out this form. They're not going to tape it or this can't be done. They can't give you x-rays. They can't give you diagnostics. And then they know that this doctor, after just seeing them for an hour, maybe 1 hour, is going to render an opinion of something they might have been dealing with for 3 years. And it's going to say that everything that their doctor said, not so much. We think you've only been hurt for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. So they're going to completely hear how their injury, something that's so personal to them, is being undermined because they're going to a doctor that's being paid for by the defense. It's a paid opinion.
Hired gun, so to speak.
Hired gun.
Now, in your practice, do you see that it's typically the same company doctors that the insurance company is hiring, or?
Yes. And when I was on the defense side, I had somebody say to the doctor during trial, "Oh, haven't seen you in a while." And it was so sarcastic. And what does that show the jury? And there's ways of playing that too. The defense can actually sometimes play this to their advantage. I think to them is, we used to try to say, "Oh, we'll hit them with how much they make," because they make a lot of money,
right?
A lot of money doing plaintiff work, you know, looking at our clients,
yep,
and rendering an opinion. But sometimes if you put in front of a jury, "Well, this guy made $3 million last year just looking at plaintiff's injuries." And they're going, "Well, he must be a great doctor. If he's making $3 million, he's going to be a great doctor." So that's something that we also have to worry about. Oh my gosh, what if they do side? Or here's a doctor who's seen our client once, and what if he just tests, because like you said, they're hired guns. They know how to testify. They're not scared on the stand. They're not nervous. And maybe a treating physician of our client that's seen them for 3 years doesn't testify in court, gets hung up on questions, gets nervous, gets challenged. And what does that show the jury? "Oh, this guy must be better."
Right.
And that really stinks too, because this is the doctor that's been treating our client for 3 years, but it's just not somebody who's used to being in court.
And I take it that the insurance companies in your practice are hiring the people that give them the best results.
Correct. And it's always easy to say, I give you that, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. Of course, we have case law. You can't have averages and whatever. But they get in that, "Oh, yeah, we think they're injured, but they should have resolved."
Yes. You know? 6 to 8 weeks.
6 to 8 weeks. You know, you fell out of a car. You hit your head. You know, you were babbling incoherently for 3 weeks. But we think you've made a wonderful recovery in 8 weeks' time. And that's a hard thing, though. It's a hard thing for our clients to swallow. Because they feel that, what am I doing this for? If this one guy is going to, or woman is going to come up there and say, "No, we don't really think so. We think their doctors are completely wrong."
Have you ever experienced where a doctor, a defense doctor, and it's the same small group of people that get hired, have you ever had it where a doctor is actually honest about the injury and gives an opinion that's favorable to your client versus favorable to the insurance company? Or is that like a unicorn, something you've
I think that's almost a unicorn. I mean, like I said, they might agree that you suffer. I had a long time ago, I had a traumatic brain injury case. And the defense expert was actually someone that typically plaintiffs went to go see. So that was like, "Oh, this is interesting." That was favorable. He did agree that a traumatic brain injury happened. The disagreement was for how long the symptoms were going to linger.
Right.
And that was rough because you're going, gosh, I mean, he did give us a good amount of time where they should have made a recovery, but really kind of took the lingering symptoms. I'm going, wait a second, if this was on the other side. So it's scary. But I've had some that have given the injury, they just don't give a permanent CSA rating.
The other topic I wanted to discuss with you is voir dire. And I'm curious about the differences between New York and, say, here in Virginia as to how voir dire is conducted.
When I was there, voir dire was still being done with a questionnaire. Voir dire did not take 20 or 30 minutes. It was an entire day. Here, we don't get a lot of time. We get the jury pool 3 days? Is it 3 days?
I think it's 48 hours.
48 hours before trial. We have 48 hours to try to, we get name, age, address, and what they do for a living. And we're trying to do some jury research. A lot of times you can't. So you're sitting in front of a group of 30 people in Virginia. And this is another reason why it's very scary to try cases for the client. We love it, right? It's great for us. It's so much fun.
A lot of fun.
But
not so much for the
client. Not so much for the client. And you're getting literally maybe 20 minutes with 30 people. And everyone comes in with inherent biases, and you can ask the question, who here could be fair and not, and everyone raises their hand because who's not going to? So it's a hard question because you're trying to gauge, are they looking at you? You know, they say use catchphrases to try to see if they watch Fox News or CNN, see who you can get these people off the jury. I have a young person. I don't want, you know, you want 18 to 25 year old males at one point was like, you don't want those on your jury. So it's very, very difficult. You always ask, anyone get injured? and you have 20 hands up. I have a back injury. Well, how many sued? Well, now there's only 5 hands up. So I'm going, oh, what do they think? They think that this money's going in my pocket and I'm just, you know, the ambulance chaser lawyer. You know, you get such a little time to try to say who is going to best evaluate my client. And, right. and what do you know from an address, an age, and an occupation?
It's so limited. When I started off as a defense attorney, the big thing was bumper stickers.
Oh, yeah.
So we would hire a deputy sheriff or investigator to go to the prospective jurors' houses and take pictures of the back of the car to see, you know, what their political yeah. inclination is, what issues favored them. Fast forward to now, what are the sort of techniques that you use?
Social media. If they have a social media, you can find out a lot about a person on social media. People put more than they should on social media.
As the horse
lawyers
will tell you.
Yeah. But a lot of times you'll say, okay, what's their profile picture? Are they animal lovers? You know, what are their likes and dislikes? What TV shows are they watching? Are they true crime readers? Are they into gardening? Are they somebody who you can tell that they've had an injury? It's very rarely you might have somebody who's either in a wheelchair or walking with crutches. Are they family oriented? They're young. What school did they go to? Where did our client go to school? Did they go to school in the same area? How close do their kids go to the same school? And now we have to get, there's a lot that goes into it, but you only have 48 hours.
Right.
And if people have a private profile, then it's really difficult to try to figure them out.
And so when you're at counsel table and the panel comes in, as we call it, and I guess each side has 3 strikes to decide who, it's not really picking the jury, it's unpicking a jury.
It's unpicking the jury. And you worry, I'm like, I don't know, they don't look like they're happy. And so half of them don't look like they're happy to be there because they don't want to be at jury duty. I'm always very conscious of picking moms on a jury, because if the case goes long, I'm like, are they going to start to think I got to get, you know, Jamie to soccer practice and I have to get Scotty to baseball game. I don't know if I'm going to be able to arrange rides. And I worry that they're not paying attention to the case because they're worried about what's going on. I mean, these are they're real people.
Right.
And that's why I try to tell the client that this case is so super important to you. To them, sometimes the jury, it's an inconvenience in their day.
Right.
That's a big dichotomy right there.
For $35, whatever it is.
Correct. And maybe a pizza from one of the local places. So those are scary pitfalls for a client when you're thinking go to trial. It's not Law and Order. It is not glamorous for the client on TV. We like to do it, but it's not glamorous for the client.
How involved do you get the client when you're actually sitting at counsel table and you have to make that heat of the battle decision about who to unpick from your jury?
It's hard because you still go, there's a lot of like, I don't, you know, or they're telling you to cross me, going, no, I like that person. Right. I don't need that person. It's difficult. And it's difficult during trial because I get it. It's so personal. And it's very hard when I keep telling them, like, think Lady Gaga, you have to keep a poker face. Like,
oh,
the whole
like
time, you know? I say, no, it's so incredibly hard, but just try. I have a hard time doing it. You know, you hear defense counsel say something, it's very difficult to not want to like raise your eyebrows or be like to the jury, what subtle hint can I tell the jury that that's ridiculous? But they want to be involved. And sometimes you just don't have the time to do that back and forth like you would in a mediation.
Right. Sometimes when my clients, I go and I tell them, look, if there's someone you absolutely can't stand, tell me who that is and tell me why. And let's try to come to an agreement about them. Because like you said, it could be the ideal juror for us in terms of demographics or what we're looking for. But, you know, sometimes a client has a gut feel and you have to go with that.
Gotta go with it.
What do you tell your clients to do as far as preparing for testimony when they actually are before the jury, after the jury's been selected, you've had the opening statements and you've laid the foundation with the police officer, whoever, and then the client is there to tell their piece. How do you prepare your clients for that?
Try to explain to them, much like we do in a deposition, just answer the question that's asked. Tell your story. Don't argue with defense counsel.
Absolutely.
They're going to say something that's going to really upset you. Don't argue. I can always redirect. I can always come back up. But it's so hard. How do you tell somebody who's been living something for 3-4 years to not get emotional? It's tough for a lawyer. It's tough for the client. Trials are never an easy decision. They're necessary sometimes, but they get a very limited time to talk to the jury Whereas with mediation, they get sometimes a whole day.
That's right. Get their day in court.
To them.
In a less aggressive environment than a trial.
And there's no rules of evidence or hearsay objections in a mediation.
Right.
Can't say a lot of stuff in court.
Well, Kimberly, thanks for your time.
Enjoyed
having you as our guest.
My pleasure.
We learned a lot, and this is part of our series From Injury to Justice, and stay tuned for more information from Burnett Williams.